Let's talk about concurrency. And what is understood as concurrency in different ways. Concurrency is a very, very colorful beast because it turns up in so many aspects of our designs that it is often easy to forget that we are narrowing our mind to, this is concurrency, right? I say task 1, 2, 3, this is concurrency. A few minutes later, I say, no, concurrency is if I distribute this over 10,000 elements. No, hang on, concurrency is if I have multiple CPUs running independently on the internet, right? So there's so many different aspects and angles on concurrency, we have to get some basic understanding how many there are. Let's start by Oxford's definitions. Literally, concurrency means something runs together in space, in parallel lines. That's nice. That's the meaning of the English word concurrent, which is actually not wrong in what we're doing here, but it is technically not very helpful because it is very metaphorical and gives us nice pictures how this works, but it doesn't give us something concrete to say this is concurrent, this is not concurrent, this is what we need. Right? And in order to define this technically, this is one of the most succinct definitions you can find what concurrency actually is. We define it negative. We say that if there is nobody who would be able to identify the temporal sequence, meaning the execution in time, of two concurrent entities, then these two entities are concurrent. If you have somebody who say, I know, this one is happening first, and then this one is happening, it's sequential. Right? I know that there's an exact sequence between them. This is the only case where it's sequential. In all other cases, it is concurrent. Now, this is not data parallel. This is not necessarily lockstep or side by side. This means I just don't know. And not knowing that something is sequential is enough to define it as concurrent. It still could, at the actual end of the day, could be executing sequentially. This is still okay, but I didn't know that. Okay? Does that make some sense? So if we don't know for sure this is sequential, we assume it's concurrent, and we treat it accordingly. Then we have to apply all the machinery which we learn in this course. If it's concurrent, then we need to do this accordingly. Okay? So, where do we have concurrency? That's a very simple slide. Basically everything. Once you actually start thinking what is actually concurrent in this world, and you can go to anything. You can go to physics, biology, look at your cat in front of you, look at your laptop, look at anything around it. And you will see that all of these systems are highly concurrent. You will probably find yourself in that sequential operation, sequential programming is something so specialized that you're beginning to be tempted to actually treat the sequential programming as the exception and the concurrent programming as the norm. We still need sequential programming. So we're not abandoning that. We're not going completely free-floating. Everything is happening without any further control. We do need sequencing. Without that, it will become very hard to give you any kind of a guarantee. But we will use that in combination to the background of everything else is actually concurrent. Okay. So we need a number of crucial more concepts, little bit of motivation. Why, as a computer scientist, would you be interested in any of that? Now, the first thing is actually quite interesting, namely, I say often something like you are able to connect with the real world. don't get philosophical on me, don't start what's the real world. But if you begin to actually build things, now as a roboticist, I'm actually doing things which actually move in real space. So this is a close at heart comment from my side, obviously, but this goes for anything. If you want to connect to the real world, you have users on the internet, you have people using your systems, you will quickly have to adapt to concurrent operations, otherwise you cannot handle these kind of real-world situations. Of course, there is a lot of other aspects of performance, reactivity, handling actual hardware which has been given to you, being able to work in embedded systems. Most embedded systems are highly concurrent in one way or the other. And an embedded system, just for a general definition, for those who are not familiar with the term, an embedded system means that your computer is part of a device. It is not an abstract concept living as a process in your computer. It is actually part of your toaster. And you're not delivering your program as a separate entity with your toaster. It comes with a toaster. Now, there are very, very complex toasters in this world. Hence, there's a wide area of embedded systems. It looks like it's a small side area for somebody who comes to that field in the first shot. But just for statistical context, embedded systems suck up and utilize 99% of all of our CPUs on this planet. They're all working in embedded systems, and there's just this 1% left, which actually runs into your laptops and desktops. Bit more technical. Computer science view on concurrency. Now, it sounds a bit nerdy, you see here, but this is things which you have in mind as a computer scientist when you talk about concurrency often. Overlapping I/O and computation. You all have been using that, whether you know this or not. But if you use I/O channels in your programs, you read data from the internet, from a keyboard, from other environments, this is never really sequential. These I/O operations are running in the background for you. Usually your operating system is doing that for you, or other embedded processors in your machine doing this for you without you being involved in that process. And then you're interacting and synchronizing with these I/O operations from your sequential program, but the I/O itself is almost always concurrent. And of course, we have multitasking. This is something that all of you will have some familiarity with. That you have, of course, many programs, many tasks, many processes running concurrently in your system. Then we have multiprocessor systems for pretty much everything today. That's the next step of abstraction from a computer science perspective. I have my 8-core machine. Now what? How do you take advantage of this 8-core machine? Then you have parallel machines, and you have general network architectures, the internet, the world. Okay, so this is the perspective from a computer science angle, looking at local I/O operations all the way to the whole concurrency of the rest of the world in different stages here. There are some terms which are still in use here. SISD, single instruction, single data. That means strictly sequential hardware operations. This terminology mostly applies to how you would describe what is happening on your hardware. This is technically extinct. This is very hard to find. Try to get a processor these days which would actually do that. This will be hard. Now we have multiple instructions, single data, pipeline processors. All your processors which you can do today will do some form of pipelined operations internally, which means you do things lined up in a pipeline, and you process all of your data in a sequential way, but concurrently inside that pipeline. And single instruction multiple data. This was very expensive when I was little. It was a pretty complex piece of hardware, usually referred to as vector processors. So that you have an array, for example, and you say, I want to add 5 to all elements of my array. Can you do this actually parallel today? Yes, you can do this parallel today on all of your desktop and laptop machines, because they all have what is technically a vector processor in all kind of variations. Unfortunately, every manufacturer invented a fancy different name how to call that. It is still vector processing, which means you have a single instruction which is applied to a whole array of data. And these vector machines, these vector entities in your CPU are to be found pretty much everywhere today. Not so much in small embedded CPUs still today, even though small embedded CPUs are already coming mostly as multi-core CPUs today as well. But vector processors is still something for slightly more higher-end machine, and all of your laptops are qualifying as higher-end machines here. Okay. What is an instruction? An instruction is, for example, a single assembly instruction at this time. So you have the single assembly instruction add a constant to a memory cell somewhere. And is that done sequentially? Or is this done at the same time to a whole range of your memory? If you can apply this instruction to a whole range, you have a vector processor. If not, you have a sequential processor there. Okay. But this is here a conceptual definition here. So instruction is not defined by this has to be an ARM assembly instruction or an Intel assembly instruction. This is a general concept of you apply instructions to data, plus, minus, max. And can you do this in sequence or can you do this in parallel? Okay. And the general concept, multiprocessors today, networks, all of that falls into multiple instruction, multiple data. You have lots and lots of concurrency applied to multiple data at the same time. This is what you have for most real-world systems today. So it's a little historic, but the terms are still used today. Yes, that's fine. That's correct. So, I would like to change now from a computer scientist to everybody else. Concurrency is not something that computer science owns and has the only right of doing that. But we have many other people who are constantly designing concurrent systems. Let's take engineers, for example. If an engineer designs a new control system, a new heavy device, a machine of some sort, a lot of things are happening concurrently there. If you think about an electronics engineer, for example, defining a power supply, a regulator circuit of some sort, you will not see this engineer think in a sequential way because all of the individual parts of the electronic circuit are, of course, all working at the same time. So it comes completely natural to think of the overall system as a highly concurrent system. Almost everything in this electronic circuit is not just pumping electrons from one side to the other in a sequential way. You think about this in a much more concurrent way. There's the interesting tendency, which I often see between hardcore computer scientists and hardcore electrical engineers. Engineers try to keep it small and simple in terms of hardware. So you need to have a little module, which is your brake controller in your car, for example, and you define a little box, a little CPU, a little embedded processor, which does just that. It has a few wires going in, a few wires going out. It's a brake pedal going in, the brake servos going out, and a few sensor wires along the way. And that's the box. That's the whole thing. And you design this individually as a separate concurrent entity. It comes completely natural if you think about this as an engineer. Now, from a computer science perspective, you often have then the tendency, hang on, this CPU capacity is available somewhere else. There's this CPU in my door window, which is actually quite underutilized. It's only working every once in a while. I have my entertainment system, which is vastly underutilized in most cars. It has a quite powerful processor on it. Why wouldn't I use this processor? There's a multitasking operating system on it, and I can just define a new task to do that. So the general tendency of computer scientists to use powerful machines and use many, many tasks and processes on single powerful machines instead of distributing it to primitive hardware and primitive machines is a general distinguishment between whether you think from a computer science perspective or from an engineering perspective about these things. In a team, you hope that you can negotiate that to actually get the best outcome in the end, and not producing 50 new processors where you can do this with 20. On the other hand, if somebody tries to sell you a car where you know that the engine management is actually done in the radio, not telling you who that is, you would probably be a bit hesitant to go there. But this is an extreme case of where computer science has just been defining, like, we can abstract everything into beautiful high-performance CPUs and don't need to physically distribute. Okay. Often you don't have a choice in a physical design because your physical system is just separate in space. So the sensor processing often has to be done where the sensor is. If you're on a satellite, for example, and you need to reduce the noise of your image which you take with your sensors on your satellite, you cannot send this data first down to Earth to do the noise reduction. You have to do this up there first before you do anything else. So a lot of operations have to be done close to the source, physically close to the source. Okay, so there's the general tendency of many less powerful processors are often preferred over single high-performance CPUs. Keep that in mind. If you work in a team, you will often get that approach as another suggestion to what you want to do with give me my 8-core 4 gigahertz machine and I do everything with it. Does concurrency lead to chaos? A lot of people say that. And for me, it's interesting why they say that. If you're going into concurrent programming without a great computer science course, say 2310, then you may actually stumble into so many errors and so many possible mistakes you can do there that you will despair very, very quickly. So if you do concurrency badly, it goes really badly. And that impression of concurrency is leading to utter chaos. Nobody can possibly control it. I have actually heard this from quite respectable computer scientists, slightly older people, who have been growing up in a sequential world. Their whole thinking is sequential. And they went into the concurrent world and came back. Said, don't do it. It's so dangerous. Nobody can possibly handle that. It blew my brain. I cannot understand what's going on there. Go back to sequential programming. There will be non-determinism, non-observable system states, plenty. And we will learn how to not just live with that, but actually live with that completely relaxed and understanding that. That's the charm of actually being educated in concurrent programming rather than just make it go, hope for the best. Hoping for the best in concurrent systems is a terrible recipe. When do you want to use non-determinism? I wouldn't say chaos. When do you want to use non-determinism? You use non-determinism when the underlying system is already non-deterministic. Is the underlying system often non-deterministic? Well, your machine is hooked up to the internet, right? That makes your machine, from that perspective, already non-deterministic. You have no control of the rest of the world. Or maybe you do, but I don't. And so I cannot really have a clear deterministic idea in what sequence things will happen. And this will affect the processing on all of your machines. So sometimes you have to go with it. You have to embrace it. The underlying system is non-deterministic. There's nothing you can do about it. Or you have the situation where I could control it. I could say, you go first, you go second, you go third. But it doesn't make a difference. If the third guy goes first, it's still exactly the same outcome. So why did you control it in the first place? It makes you write more code. It makes you possibly introduce more errors, because if you constrain your system further, you can actually have more dangers of locking it up. And so it often is done on purpose that you keep your system non-determinism as much as possible. And you need, on the other hand, synchronization in some points. And you want to control exactly where it is required to do that. And in those situations, we will need to learn how to do that correctly and not a tad more. Okay, this is the overall gist of how to handle concurrency in the most educated and effective way you can come up with. Take this as a little bit more of an abstract concept at the moment. You will learn the technology throughout this course. Concurrency will happen on many different levels, on many different abstraction levels. Concurrency obviously happens on the level of electronic circuits, on the level of physics, and the level of logic gates. This is all highly concurrent. And assembly level, there's concurrency there. You have multi-core machines, and we have operating systems, all the way to networks. In this course, mostly we will look into these areas here in networks. Assembly level concurrency you have done in 2300, hopefully. Otherwise, we will have to patch in a little bit for those who have not. Okay. This is an interesting one. Often concurrency is an abstraction. What does that mean? That means you look at your sequential programming, at your sequential C, whatever program, and from a conceptual point of your C program, this is sequential, right? Now you compile it down. You compile it down to a modern CPU. You use I/O operations of some sort. You evolve an operating system behind that. And in order to execute your sequential code, your conceptually sequential code, actually a lot of concurrent operations will happen in physics to do that. So the underlying system is often concurrent, while your system on top looks sequential. So you have to look at what level am I sequential, at what level will I be concurrent. That goes the other way around too. If you define a concurrent program, say your ADA tasks, you're going nuts on defining tasks in your ADA program, you have 20 different tasks there, and then you compile this ADA program for a 1980s single core CPU, ultimately everything will happen in sequence. Right? Now you don't control the sequence, but it is still sequential. Right? So it's an abstraction, and sometimes it looks sequential but is concurrent, sometimes it's the other way around. Think about this for a moment, it's not very hard, just for completeness sake, to get the idea of that. So, this was our technical definition, our negative definition. What is a concurrent system? We do not have an observer which tells us otherwise. No? A little bit more concrete, concurrent programming. This is a definition from your textbook, from the Ben-Ari. Concurrent programming abstraction is the study of interleaved execution sequences of the atomic instructions of sequential processes. Let's go through that a little bit slowly. atomic instructions. Now, at some point, you will come to that insight very quickly over the next week. At some point, you need to rely on the fact that some operations will be atomic. What does that mean? That means that this instruction is always executed in full without anybody interfering with it in the middle. So there is no interference in time with an atomic instruction. The atomic instruction is always done in full or not at all. So it could fail. I'm not executing that. Or I'm executing that, but I'm not executing the whole thing. And now we have interleaved execution sequences. So you have your, for example, tasks in Ada, which is a sequence of instructions. And these sequence of instructions, atomic instructions, these sequence of instructions can be interleaved with other tasks. Now, careful, I misled you here already in that sentence quite badly. Sequence of atomic instructions are not single lines or instructions on ADA level. What is atomic here is much, much finer grained. We have to look very carefully where are, in the end, the atomic instructions. This will be the next chapter in this course. So bear with me about the definition, what exactly is atomic. At what level will you find atomic operations? This is very usually on a very, very low level. So interleaving means you have then these instructions, and let me do the cliche thing. You have then these instructions interleaving with each other, and you don't know in which way exactly. Right? They're overlapping in time, interleaving. Some are coming concurrently, some are coming in random sequences, overlapping each other. And this is concurrent programming from a pragmatic programming point of view. So now we have multiple sequences here. A concurrent program is multiple sequential programs which are executed concurrently. Nice. So that sounds simple. What happens if there is no interaction between these concurrent system parts, which means all of these sequential operations we can analyze individually, right? We have just sequential programs which are running independent of each other, side by side, concurrently, but they don't talk to each other. They never interfere with each other. They never exchange data. They just run side by side, and everybody does their own thing. If this is the case, our course ends here. Because it's boring. There's nothing to analyze, nothing to do. Now the course does not end here. Because, yes, there will be, of course, interaction. This is what I will talk about next time. Interaction can have two different forms, and these different forms will be looked at very carefully and triggers basically all the effort which we have to do for the rest of the course. Your sequential concurrent processes will, of course, interact in one way or the other. Otherwise, they're just living on a little island. Nobody cares. There's no interaction with them, and the course ends a little prematurely. So, this is how far I wanted to get today, and I got right here, so that makes me happy. Am I too fast? Are you still okay with the pacing? I know the first part of the course was insanely fast, and I probably damaged a few brains in the process. Sorry for that. Then we got a bit more reasonably paced, I think, but give me some feedback whether this is a reasonable speed. Otherwise, thanks for joining, and let me get back to slightly larger mouse pointer. There we go. I will publish the labs later on today. Any other comments about organization, course? Do you want me to do anything else? I will go more interactive by Monday and next Friday. We'll do some polls in the whole thing, some little exercises along the lines. We'll do that. Otherwise, I wish you wonderful, rainy, hopefully not too cold weekend someplace. See you Monday. Cheers. Thank you.